No static. CFRC 101.9 FM. CFRC.ca. CFRC.ca/no_static.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Lauren Tucker, Dinah Jansen, and Paige Lang. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. The city has provided the first public statement on the status of the Lemoyne Point Farm property, sharing that they are currently in negotiations with the state trustees to acquire the property. The waterfront property located at 2000 Front Road has been a highly discussed topic within the community since longtime owner Mary Fraser passed away in 2022, leaving the space in limbo. Conversations between the city, the estate, and community partners have been behind closed doors until this most recent release. For the city, this property is an opportunity to advance their goals of providing a connected and accessible waterfront and more opportunities for urban farming. At this point, the city and Fraser's estate trustees disagree on how to interpret parts of the will. In the update from the city, it was explained that Fraser's will gives the city an option to purchase the property under certain conditions, including keeping, as far as possible, the property zoned for rural use. They are currently awaiting advice and guidance from the Ontario Superior Court to move forward. In the release, it was stated, quote, "The city recognizes the importance of respecting Ms. Fraser's intentions as well as the property's natural and cultural heritage significance to the residents of Kingston. The city is committed to continuing to work with the estate trustees through negotiation, mediation, or if necessary, litigation to advance the city's interpretation of Ms. Fraser's will," end quote. Advocates for the preservation and community use of the property at 2000 Front Road, the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group, have been supportive of the city's pursuit to acquire the property. CFRC sat down with Jim Biagi, a member of the Save Lemoyne Point Farm Group. Here is a bit of that conversation. This is the first public statement the city has made on the Lemoyne Point Farm property in this explicit way. How is SLPF feeling about this development?
We're quite pleased. The city has mostly discussed the farm, as they call it, 2000 Front Road West, at an in-camera or on an in-camera capacity. And so this announcement is firstly, at least some news about the developments. And then secondly, I think we're quite pleased that the city is so serious about both trying to acquire the property and in their statement indicating how they want to preserve the property for Kingstonians.
Yeah, absolutely. And is this sort of similar to what you've already been told in private discussions or heard through the grapevine, or is this sort of really new information?
We've had some verbal communications with councillors and mayor, but they've been very professional in having the in-camera requirements of not sharing information. I think we had a sense that the city was in communication with the estate already and looking at the possibility of buying the property, but two years and some months have passed since the estate became active when the prior owner Mary Fraser died. So it's been quite a while.
BIG also clarified the nature of the disagreements and how to interpret the will referred to in the update.
There are questions for clarity around the requirements of the will and the interests of the city. So two appraisals have been submitted on the property with quite disparate numbers, one at roughly $9 million and one at roughly $29 million. And the average, of course, is an average of two very disparate numbers. And so the terms that apply if the city does acquire the property is to maintain the property as a rural designation, which would put its value much less than if the property was put open to development. And we I suppose if there is some speculation, I think that's where you might see a big discrepancy between a lower appraisal number and a higher appraisal number. After some negotiation between the estate and the city, the executors of the estate filed a notice of application in the Toronto, Ontario Superior Court asking for advice clarifying the meaning of some aspects of the secondary will. And so the executors are asking the court to do several things: clarify the authority of the estate trustees to select appraisers, to rule on the right of the city to review the appraiser's methodology, to confirm the meaning of certain clauses about the city purchasing the farm, and to request that a decision be forthcoming within 180 days. So there does seem at least to be an attempt to conclude this business in a relatively timely fashion.
At this point, the city has declined requests for further comment, stating that the information distributed through the short release is all that can be provided at this time. More details will be shared in the future, and the city encourages community organizations and residents to continue to share their input.
Overall, I would say that our group is very pleased with the city's position and their eagerness to look at the property as an area that could be beneficial to the whole city of Kingston, which is exciting.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News with the latest on the Lemoyne Point Farm property.
Thanks so much, Christina. Here's your arts and culture news for today. Continuing this month at the TED until August 31st, we'll be contemplating Glaciers, A Dialogue, a solo exhibition from artist Jan Kabatoff, curated by Jessica Turner. The exhibition will include photography, sculpture, paintings, video, audio, and even a virtual reality element using the Oculus headset, as well as footage from a documentary on the melting of the Athabasca Glacier, which is currently in production from this creative team. All ages are welcome to peruse this exhibition in the TED Center Gallery, and it is free to do so, though exhibition hours may vary. There's also new events and exhibitions at the TED all the time, and you can learn more at tedcenter.org/events. Registration for fall term programming at the Kingston School of Art is now open, including programs for youth and adults, as well as workshops. This includes adult classes in drawing, fiber and textile arts, mixed media, painting, printmaking, and sculpture, and youth programs for kids ages 6 to 16 and families. There's also a variety of 1 and 2 day workshops available for registration. As well, applications are now open for the first annual KSOA member show, and members can submit pieces on their website now. For more information and to register, visit ksoa.info. This and every summer Tuesday, you can head down to Springer Market Square for Salsa in the Square from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., enjoy a free beginner class, and then hit the open dance floor until 10 p.m. Also, every Wednesday summer evening, enjoy Swingin' Summer, a live music throwback to the era of romantic, joyful, and jazzy songs in the Square from 7 to 8 p.m. And every summer Friday evening, Springer Market Square hosts Kickin' It Country from 7 to 8 p.m., featuring live local country music. For more on these events, visit downtownkingston.ca. Every Monday at Daft Brewing, Bon Evans hosts Music Trivia Mondays at 7 p.m. Put your music knowledge to the test in 4 more rounds of trivia, whether you're going it solo or in a team with clips, questions, and more. The winning team walks away at the end of the night with a $50 gift card and bragging rights, so be sure to check it out for a Monday night of music and fun. Kingston welcomes back Movies in the Square and Springer Market Square on Thursday evenings this summer, and the full lineup has now been announced. This week, August 22nd, Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian, starts at dusk. You can also catch Lilo and Stitch on August 29th. Be sure to mark your calendars now and bring your blankets, chairs, and bug spray to experience your favorite films for free this summer under the stars. Coming up at Kingston's Independent Cinema, The Screening Room, you can catch special screenings of 1940's Rebecca on August 20th and 22nd, and 1963's The Birds on August 24th, 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th as part of the Summer Alfred Hitchcock Presents series. As well, 1974's Phantom of Paradise will be shown in 50th anniversary screenings on August 20th, 21st, and 22nd. As well, 40th anniversary screenings of Purple Rain will be playing on August 24th, 27th, 28th, and 29th. Also coming up at the screening room is Cat Video Fest 2024 from August 17th to 22nd, a fundraiser where 10% of all ticket sales will be donated to Kingston Animal Rescue, featuring compilations of the latest and best cat videos of the internet on the big screen. Their 2024 classic movie poll for audience suggestions is now open at their website, and there are also new arrivals and special screenings all the time, so be sure to check back at screeningroomkingston.com for all of your cinema adventures. That's all I've got for you on Arts Desk today. Now I'll turn it over to Jesse Bell at the Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and today's sports report is actually a special teaser trailer hyping the upcoming season of Queens football right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is our 101st season covering the team, and as you'll hear with this teaser trailer, it's shaping up to be one of the most eventful seasons ever.
Absolute heartbreaker at Richardson Stadium. I'm gonna be sick. This is the worst day of my life. Rolling, throwing, picked, ball game. Western will win as Alex Freakin's heroic attempt comes up short.
The greater the expectations, the heavier the weight. And in 2023, the Queen's Gaels had the weight of the world on their shoulders. And then it all came crashing down.
Alex Freakin is down after a gutless hit!
But in spite of the losses, the injuries, and the overwhelming weight of great expectations, this Gaels team did not crumble. And now a new season means new expectations. New pressures, new challenges, and most importantly, a new opportunity for the Gaels to be golden once more. Can this squad end the title drought? Will Queens become kings of Ontario football? There's only one way to find out, and there's only one place to catch all the action.
This is electric. This is Queens football on CFRC.
Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. We're expecting conditions to clear up tonight and we'll have a low of 10 degrees. On Tuesday, August 20th, we're expecting mainly cloudy skies with winds being 20 kilometers per hour and gusting to 40 in the morning. We have a high of 19 degrees and a UV index of 5 or moderate. Tuesday night, we'll have cloudy periods with a 30% chance of showers and a low of 10. On Wednesday, August 21st, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers and a high of 21. Wednesday night, clear skies with a low of 10. On Thursday, August 22nd, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 23 and clear skies at night with a low of 12. Finally, finishing off the week, on Friday, we'll have sunny skies with a high of 24 and clear skies to finish off the evening with a low of 13. That wraps up your weather report for this coming week, and next up is your CFRC Weekly Traffic Report. Now for your CFRC Traffic Report for this evening. Pavement rehabilitations will be taking place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. MacDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. Highway 401 eastbound and westbound at Sydenham Road to Gardner's Road, lane and ramp closures. August 19th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., August 20th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., August 21st from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m., and August 22nd from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. PSPC wishes to advise users that the LaSalle Causeway is still fully closed to motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians until further notice. In road closures to look out for this week, Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity. Cataract Way Woods Drive at Holden and at Woodhaven, closed beginning August 20th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day to accommodate signage installation and line painting. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, closed until September 1st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will remain open to local traffic. King Street, Plast Arms to north end of King, closed until September 30th for the construction of new storm and roadbed. Road will be open to local traffic. Market Street, King to Ontario, closed August 23rd from 7 a.m. to 12 a.m. for the Kingston Humane Society event at Springer Market Square. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until September 27th for downtown Kingston BIA activations. Union Street, Victoria to Albert, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. For project details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed for the Queen's J-Duck project. Wellington Street, Earl to Gore, closed beginning August 19th to September 10th for a new water service installation. And finally, Wellington Street, Main to George, closed until August 30th to accommodate construction-related activity for the Berryfield Highlands subdivision project. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Restoration Project is underway and is expected to conclude in late December 2024. No more than 50% of the available 271 parking spaces will be closed at any time. There is also parking availability at the Chown Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages and the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays, Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen while construction work is done. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins phase two of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase two of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. John Counter Boulevard at Montreal, expect delays while a contractor completes interim intersection improvements. Work will take place overnight from Sunday night to Friday mornings during the week and on weekends during the day. Johnson Street, Portsmouth to Robert Wallace. Expect a westbound lane closure until August 29th for storm sewer and gas relocation work. Detours will be in place for the duration of the closure. Portsmouth Avenue, Miles to Johnson, expect a southbound lane closure until August 29th for storm and sewer gas relocation work. Detours will be in place for the duration of the closure. You can find details on any of those projects on Get Involved Kingston. That wraps up your CFRC traffic report for this evening, and next up is your concerts and events calendar with Paige.
It's time for CFRC's concert and events calendar. Have an event you'd like covered? Reach out through CFRC.ca today. On Monday, August 19th, head down to the club at the RCHA for an afternoon of early jazz from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. with Jasmine Wibodish. Tickets are just $5. The Cove Inn host Gerald McGrath is part of their monthly musical residency. Enjoy a solo show with engaging soundscapes from 5 to 8 p.m. and admission is by donation. Head down to the Royal Tavern 2.0 for a night of poetry, storytelling, and music. This event is free to attend and runs from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. On Tuesday, August 20th, enjoy a happy hour and jam with Tom Savage and friends at the club at the RCHA. The afternoon show runs from 4 to 7 p.m. and is free to attend. Montreal-based British-French producer Joni Boyd is coming to Hotel Wolf Island this Tuesday. They play experimental camatronic multi-genre music, and the show runs from 6 to 9 p.m. and is free to attend. From 6:30 to 10, come dance in Springer Market Square with Salsa in the Square. Featuring electrifying beats, spicy moves, and fun, no experience necessary. The event is free to attend. From 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., enjoy Ontario's oldest market in Kingston Market Square, featuring local produce, pre-made food, and artisanal crafts. Open every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. On Wednesday, August 21st, Hotel Wolf Island is hosting Winnipeg-based trio The Jansen Boys. From 6 to 9 p.m., enjoy rootsy, harmony-based folk. The show is free to attend. Walk down the Springer Market Square for Swingin' Summer for the romantic songs of yesteryear with LaSalle Causeway Swing Band. The show plays from 7 to 8 p.m. and is free to attend. Bring your friends and family and enjoy the summer weather. Bring your competitive spirit to Daff Brewing for trivia. The game is from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Teams can be a max of 6 people, and there is $100 in prizes. The event is free to attend. Grab a drink and have fun. Experience a night of military precision, discipline marching, rifle drills, and fireworks at historic Fort Henry with the Fort Henry Guard. The show is from 7 to 8:30 p.m., perfect time to watch the sunset with friends and family. For tickets, go to www.forthenry.com. On Thursday, August 22nd, Juno Award-winning blues artist Garrett Mason is playing the Cove Inn. Tickets are $25, and the show runs from 8 to 10 p.m. Have a trippy Thursday night with genre fluid psychedelic band Holy Wow playing Hotel Wolf Island. The show runs from 8:30 to 11 p.m. and admission is by donation. Kingston Blues Society presents three nights of blues and fun at outdoor venues as well as the club at the RCHA. Featuring George Kilby Jr., Miss Emily, Hellbound Trail, and Sweet Pete in the Heat. For ticket information and venues, check out eventbrite.ca. Have an old hoodie collecting dust bunnies in the back of your closet? Bring it over to Daff Brewing and support Hoodies for the Homeless, a live music event featuring local Kingston artists Clem Chesterfield, The Millwrights, Laser Bear, Tom Savage, and more. The event starts at 5 p.m. and the music starts at 6 p.m. Need an idea for a date night, or are the kids getting antsy? Head over to Springer Market Square for the Movies in the Park. This Thursday features Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian. The movie starts when the sun goes down around 8 p.m. Don't forget your lawn chair and extra cash for snacks. On Friday, August 23rd, every Friday from 7 to 10 p.m., Christopher Jackson and friends play Blue Martini for a rockin' good time. Admission is free. Put on your dancing shoes and head over to Hotel Wolf Island for Bill Coleman. Enjoy a night of improvised dance music from 7 to 9 p.m. Admission is free. Dust off your cowboy boots for a night of country at Next Church, featuring Hobby, Cody Allen James and Good Co., customer service, and Brock Mattson. The show is from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. and tickets are $15. Head down to Springer Market Square for Tunes for Tales, celebrating 140 years of compassion with the Kingston Humane Society. Featuring Miss Emily, The Wilderness, and Evan Rotella, the show starts at 7 p.m. and is free to attend. The Toucan host Kingston-based artists Futura Free, Willy Nilly, The Echoes, and Matt Almeida from 10:30 to 2 a.m. Hang out and have a drink and enjoy the night of live music for free. Kingston Penn Tours welcome back outdoor movies at Kingston Penn. This Friday is a screening of Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, and Saturday is Oppenheimer. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the movie starts at 8 p.m. Don't forget your lawn chair. Tickets are general admission at $18.70 plus tax, and don't forget to bring extra cash for snacks. On Saturday, August 24th, are you a fan of John Mellencamp, James Taylor, and Blue Rodeo? Well, Jeff Calorie's for you. Head down to the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. to enjoy the tunes for free. Spend your Saturday night at the Royal Tavern 2.0 featuring Courtney Kane from 3 to 5 p.m., Paula Wood from 6 to 8 p.m., and stay late with Crystal Fisher in the Engine 1095 from 9 to 2 a.m. Admission is free. Local bands Rated Blue and the Evan Jackson Band are playing the Toucan from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Grab a drink and hang out and enjoy. The admission is free. Limestone City Burlesque takes on Shakespeare like you've never seen before. Leather, chains, regicide. Need I say more? Head down to the Royal Theatre Thousand Islands to watch the show from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Tickets are $20. Bring your friends and family to Sydenham Street from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday for summer fun on Sydenham. Featuring live music from Roger James, family-friendly activities, and fun entertainers. Head down to Top Shelf Distillers August 24th and 25th for the Ontario Moonshine Festival. Featuring live music, food, and unique spirits, this is something for everyone. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and is free for all ages. On Sunday, August 25th, support the celebration of Little Cat's 60th anniversary with Catarocway Conservation. Featuring local musicians Sticky Henderson and Christopher Jackson, the show is held in the beautiful Little Catarocway Creek Conservation Area from 1 to 4 p.m. and tickets are $20. The show is for all ages. The Pub at the Opinicon presents Somerset Combo as part of their 2024 live music series. From 2 to 5 p.m., enjoy the outdoor show. Reservations are encouraged. The show is free. Singer-songwriter with inspirations of folk, country, and rock, Tyson Sullivan is playing Spearhead Brewery this Sunday. From 2 to 5 p.m., enjoy the music. Admission is free. Enjoy the music of ABBA at Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts from 8:45 to 10:15 p.m. The Candlelit Tribute brings true magic to your Sunday. The tickets are $35, general admission. Head over to Kingston Memorial Center for Loving Spoonful and the Memorial Farmers Market's new event, a block party featuring artists DJ Third Place and GJLK. The party is a celebration of local food and runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Bring your friends and enjoy the traditional market with a festive flair. The event is free to attend. Montreal Street Collective presents a vintage market on Montreal Street, featuring several downtown vintage thrift shops and local artisans. The market runs from 9 to 5 p.m. The event is free to attend. That's all for this week's concert and events calendar.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Soup.
Hi, my name is Hayden, and I have a new show on CFRC called Alphabet Soup.
A bowl of hot?
Make sure it's hot.
Alphabet Soup is a musical variety show that's live every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m.
Make sure it's hot.
Right.
Okay, sir. Coming right up.
Tune in to hear something classic or something fresh, Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CFRC.
Hey, Charlie, Table 26 wants a hot Alphabet Soup.
CFRC Kingston.
The best music.
You are tuned in to Kingston's only truly local radio station, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thank you for tuning in. This is edition 228. On the program today, I am sharing the first in a series of interviews that I've worked on to look at the topic of capitalism and sacrifice. This series is going to look at voices that are confronting, through research, writing, and action, mythologies of the international economic system today, capitalism. These interviews came out of a context of discussion with activist scholar Max Haven, who wrote the book Palm Oil, The Greece of Empire. And this book looks at the connections between palm oil as a product and colonialism from Africa to Asia, the role of palm oil in the production of weapons, including napalm, and the greasing of trains, looking at how this originally very helpful local product in West Africa became manipulated and exploited, folded into the production system of multiple products that really speak to the violence of the commodification of nature and the earth as defined by the capitalist relationship to planet Earth and the framework of endless growth. These concepts that are present in this book look critically at how capitalism depends on sacrifice, and this is visited in the book I mentioned, Palm Oil, The Greece of Empire. In speaking with Max Haven, I thought it would be important to really break down this idea that societies today have moved beyond sacrifice as a ritualistic part of sustaining social order. So these conversations look at how capitalism depends on sacrifice today. Sacrificial populations, whether it's through climate, whether it's through labor policies that are deadly, whether it's through the military-industrial complex and the profits made through war. So this broadcast, Capitalism, Sacrifice of Humanity, is a three-part series that looks into these issues. The first conversation is with activist scholar Nick Partika, who works with the Hampton Institute. I thought it was good to start with this interview because Nick really breaks down some of the fundamental building blocks of thinking about capitalism as an economic system that depends on excess populations and frameworks of human sacrifice today. So here is the conversation with Nick Partika as part of this special series on Free City Radio, Capitalism, Sacrifice of Humanity. Thanks for tuning in. And here's the conversation with Nick. There's a lot of critique internationally right now around, you know, some pretty basic points that there's a broad consensus on around the capitalist system, if we want to say more generally. One of them is global inequality that is rising. Another is the connection between unfettered capitalism and environmental catastrophe. Nick, in your writings, you've gone to a deeper level to think about this notion that built into the contemporary economic system is a framework of human sacrifice. And, you know, this is something that might be surprising to some listeners, you know, to sort of compare this economic era to other sort of frameworks of power in the past that were based on those sort of systems of sacrificial practices. So maybe you could start by introducing yourself and then just share a bit about this text that you've written and why it was important for you to put those ideas out there in this current time.
Thank you again for having me. As you said, my name is Nick. I'm a doctor of political philosophy and the philosophy of economics, and I focus on Karl Marx and Marxism. So that's my educational background. I wrote this piece for a think tank called the Hampton Institute, which is a really a grassroots, self-funded organization of like-minded radical scholars and thinkers who are, right, dedicated to trying to provide some of the commentary analysis that you don't find and can't find other places. I actually, funnily enough, I actually had to go back and look to see when I had done this. And so I had put this together in late 2015, early 2016. So that's some, if that, you know, gives you any sort of, context for when I was doing this. And for me, I think really for this article, the idea was really to try to convey, and I think, again, this is something, as I think you had just mentioned, right, that we don't often think in these terms, was to convey the notion of how fundamentally predatory, right, and I think that's the best word for it, how fundamentally predatory the capitalist system is, and the way that it uses people, right, uses up their lives and throws them away, all to create surplus value and turn it into capital, right? Turn it into wealth. And that this nature of the system is, it's not an accident. It's not a bad apples. It's an all pervasive. It's not a bug. It's a feature, right? To use that expression, right? This is built in. This is baked in, as they say, so that there really isn't, right? These are not some of the maladies that we see socially, right? Rather than signs of malfunctioning, right? These are the signs of the well-functioning of a system whose right lifeblood is the degradation, dehumanization, again, the sacrifice, if you will, right? Because it is the working class whose physical health, mental health, family relations, community relations, right? All the basic building blocks that make a thriving, right, life for a human, and dignified, right, thriving and dignified life for a human, these are the things that are fundamentally denied to the minority, right, that capitalism structurally creates and maintains, right? Marx talks famously about, right, the reserve army of the unemployed, right, and the disciplining function and the many functions that the existence of such a phenomenon plays in our society. For me, the whole point was, of course, in the context of 2016, which is a year I think we all, remember as quite tumultuous, again, was to highlight the way in which, much like ancient societies, where they, we had sort of an inverse sort of approach, right? So I talk about this in the article, which I contrast. What the ancients had was this idea of a comedy of innocence, so that their sacrificial victims had to be willing. And so they had various artifices, various devices that they could use to, again, by hook or by crook, create often the illusion or the pretense that the sacrificial animal or person was, a willing victim. Because otherwise, right, it sort of undermines the logic of sacrifice. Contemporarily, right, modern capitalism, rather than a comedy of innocence, what we have, perversely, I would say, is a comedy of guilt. And this often goes by the name of personal responsibility in right-wing and in libertarian circles, this idea that everyone is responsible for their life choices and whatever befalls you is entirely your own fault, right? Again, they completely miss the structural element of the way that capitalism generates poverty and inequality, right? Again, as Marx calls the proletariat, right, the capitalism's special product. This is, right, a unique thing that the capitalist system needs to exist in order for it to function. So, like I said, yeah, that was to highlight these sort of phenomenon, which are not the common way people perceive society. This was sort of the idea of the article.
Can you maybe locate when you wrote it? You talked about 2016 being a turbulent year. Maybe it could be helpful for people to think about some of the, sort of situations that were unfolding or political struggles or, issues that were on your mind when you were trying to present this framework.
Absolutely. Without going into a lot of details, my process is sometimes, long, but I think, in 2016, in late 2015, early 2016, I think there were issues of racial justice and inequality that were certainly in the air. It was early summer that the major protests in Ferguson, you know, started kicking off. And I think that kind of dominated a lot of the summer. I think some of it too was that, you know, my political party, our local organization, we had been part of a conference that year. And one of our topics was on, you know, mass incarceration and how that fed into, you know, structurally fed into the capitalist system. So that's why one of the themes of the article in rereading it in the last couple of days, I definitely picked up on that, you know, the strong theme of sort of how mass incarceration is really, can be seen as an economic phenomenon, as something that's really about, again, in one way, you almost see the logic of sacrifice coming through, you know, all the more clearly in that we really create very different from the ancient world, actually, right? We create almost a dedicated pool of sacrificial victims, of people, right, specifically set aside for the, you know, right, the school-to-prison pipeline and mass incarceration. And, we've almost destined, right, by your, you know, by people's zip code, what life outcomes you are more and more likely to experience, in some ways, right, preordaining people a certain fate and then, quite perversely, hanging on them this, like, idea that they're really the guilty ones, right? Their own individual choices are what resulted in this this end, so.
I can definitely see where you're getting at in terms of understanding how the prison system creates, like, an enclosed, policed framework for that sort of sacrificial context of the economic system. I mean, we can point to many examples around the world, but it's, you know, labor in prison is a huge injustice. I think one sort of argument that is often sort of put up when you present the sort of ideas and critiques that you're putting forward is like, well, you know, we sort of have to mitigate the system and sort of, you know, deal with the reality as it is. And there's not a lot of willingness to get into the sort of deeper critiques that you're putting forth. Now, I would imagine, you know, there's very, you know, important short-term demands of social movements that I'm sure you engage with, you know, you and millions of others, activists. But there's also that sort of broader critical work of thinking about the situation we face on a systemic level, which your article gets into. Maybe if you could talk about that dynamic and why it's important to have those bigger conversations also about, like, sort of the inherent violence of capitalism as a sacrificial system.
Absolutely. I think for me, you know, I think you have to confront, I mean, I know it's off-putting and it's not fun, but I think you have to look the violence of the system very squarely in the face, because I think when you do, when you wrap your head around the true scale of the violence, right? Because, you know, look, there's George Floyd and there's really no words, I think, strong enough, you know, to condemn. I mean, you almost, English doesn't, like, have strong enough words for that. And yet there is a different kind of violence, a more mundane, grinding, everyday, behind the scenes violence of, like, the high price of insulin, of, like, long waits to see a doctor, of, like, no public library in your area, or, right, you live in a food debt. Like, there are these other indignities that are not things in themselves fatal, but it becomes, you know, like a death by a thousand cuts. It becomes, and when I think when you wrap your head around just how much violence is required every single day to maintain the capitalist system, right? And again, that violence that goes beyond the cops shooting a guy, but, you know, again, to the silent violence, if you will, of, like, homelessness and starvation and, right, sickness and disease, these things that, like, we force people to live with. When you wrap your head around that, I choose to believe you can't not notice the inhumanity the cruelty. You cannot, again, these are not fun things, but once you've seen them, you can't unsee them. And I choose to believe that once you see them, you will be motivated to join with whoever else sees them and wants to get rid of them. To your point, and again, maybe some folks, you know, won't take it well, but one of my favorite quotes, you know, is from Lenin, you know, who said, without revolutionary theory, you can't be a revolution. And so, you know, without opening too big a can of worms about the relative weights of theory and praxis, I think it is, yeah, important, as you said, to like, think about some of these structural issues, try to put our thoughts on paper, try to articulate, because again, I mean, there is propaganda of, there's talking to our friends and trying to convince them and the people around us that, you know, we need to do things differently. But I also think that there's a value and a utility for the individual and for the movement of, yeah, putting our thoughts into the form of an essay or a poem or whatever, putting them into some structured form to convey a message that hopefully resonates in somebody else, becomes a seed that germinates into, right, they're developing a revolutionary and a radical consciousness. A revolutionary,
yeah, and also to debate within social movements, right? Like, my background is more from the anarchist movement, where we're very critical of state power and thinking about that as a sort of solution to these structural injustices. As time has gone on, you know, I've seen a lot of debate across movements, across different sections of, you know, left thinking. And what I really appreciated about your text, Nick, is that you really sort of lay out a systemic critique. And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about that, because I think there's sort of a fatality that often happens in terms of the capacity to address these larger issues, right? Like, and I can assume, I think that's probably the case, that the idea of this text was to provoke conversation, not to like sort of spell out like, this is totally what's up, but to sort of have like a deeper conversation about the issues that we're facing, which I feel is so important.
Definitely. I mean, part of that is sort of the ethos of Hampton Institute, which is, I mean, part of our goal was really to provoke more to, despite whatever personal beliefs we have, more to ask than to answer the question, you know, yeah, to get people thinking, get them talking, because that really is the beginning, thinking, talking to other people. You know, this is what movements, parties, this is what revolutions are made of. And I mean, to me, I don't know if it's just sort of my particular cast of mind, but I take some hope in sort of, you know, looking at it sort of in a Marxist way, that in looking sort of systemically, you know, a social system, a mode of production, to, you know, in the technical term, is like a machine. It's put together. And anything you can put together, you can take apart. And that's, I mean, to me, and again, I know that it's like, you know, I hope I'm not digging too deep for a silver lining, but I really do think that when you think in system terms, it helps you to see the way in which, yeah, systems, different systems are built from different elements. They work different ways, you know, but ultimately at the end of the day, it isn't anything capitalism. I mean, what is that like Margaret Atwood, you know, quote, right? Like, the power of the king seemed eternal in 1600, you know, the power of capitalism seems eternal today, right? And it will only, you know, and it will only be after the fact that we look back and think, man, you know, how did we see it as so permanent, as so formidable, when, you know, it's actually a lot more brittle. You know, and for me, I think that's also, you know, a major, a theme I like to hit wherever I can, is the system is more brittle than you think it is. And it can be broken, more easily than I think people think. And I think when you have a vision that says, you know, we can do this, you know, you're more likely to try. I do, you know, not to be weird, but I think there is some power of positive thinking and believing in yourself. You know, if you truly are animated by, you know, your belief. Yeah, you. I mean, I think, you know, Fidel Castro landed on Cuba with like 14 other people.
Yeah, and also to debate within social movements, right? Like, my background is more from the anarchist movement, where we're very critical of state power and thinking about that as a sort of solution to these structural injustices. As time has gone on, you know, I've seen a lot of debate across movements, across different sections of, you know, left thinking. And what I really appreciated about your text, Nick, is that you really sort of lay out a systemic critique. And I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about that, because I think there's sort of a fatality that often happens in terms of the capacity to address these larger issues, right? Like, and I can assume, I think that's probably the case, that the idea of this text was to provoke conversation, not to like sort of spell out like this is totally what's up, but to sort of have like a deeper conversation about the issues that we're facing, which I feel is so important.
Definitely. I mean, part of that is sort of the ethos of Hampton Institute, which is, I mean, part of our goal was really to provoke more to, despite whatever personal beliefs we have, more to ask than to answer the question, you know, yeah, to get people thinking, get them talking, because that really is the beginning, thinking, talking to other people. You know, this is what movements, parties, this is what revolutions are made of. And I mean, to me, I don't know if it's just sort of my particular cast of mind, but I take some hope in sort of, you know, looking at it sort of in a Marxist way, that in looking sort of systemically, you know, a social system, a mode of production, to, you know, in the technical term, is like a machine. It's put together. And anything you can put together, you can take apart. And that's, I mean, to me, and again, I know that it's like, you know, I hope I'm not digging too deep for a silver lining, but I really do think that when you think in system terms, it helps you to see the way in which, yeah, systems, different systems are built from different elements. They work different ways, you know, but ultimately at the end of the day, it isn't anything capitalism. I mean, what is that like Margaret Atwood, you know, quote, right? Like, the power of the king seemed eternal in 1600, you know, the power of capitalism seems eternal today, right? And it will only, you know, and it will only be after the fact that we look back and think, man, you know, how did we see it as so permanent, as so formidable, when, you know, it's actually a lot more brittle. You know, and for me, I think that's also, you know, a major, a theme I like to hit wherever I can, is the system is more brittle than you think it is. And it can be broken, you know, more easily than I think people think. And I think when you have a vision that says, you know, we can do this, you know, you're more likely to try. I do, you know, not to be weird, but I think there is a, there is some power of positive thinking and believing in yourself. You know, if you truly are animated by, you know, your belief, yeah, you, I mean, I think, you know, Fidel Castro landed on Cuba with like 14 other people. And look what happened.
I appreciate that, Nick. I think about also like organizing, right? Like, and I think about those very small meetings that happen at the beginning of campaigns where it's two or three people trying to, you know, develop a campaign for a fair living wage, or, you know, and that happens multiple places around the world. You know, if we're thinking about like textile workers in Bangladesh, this is one example that comes to mind. If we're thinking about the impacts of like this sort of systemic questions on workers, I'm thinking about also how, you know, the textile industry is an example of a lot of things that you're, and fast fashion is an example of a lot of the systemic issues that you're raising, which workers' movements in Bangladesh have been somewhat successful in projecting to an international stage against incredible odds. But maybe you could talk about this industry as sort of exemplifying a lot of what you're talking about.
Sure. I mean, I think that's actually a really fantastic example. I mean, I think it's also an interesting case of like how, you know, I say everything old is new again. But I mean, you look at, if you look back at the history of our country of like the issues and problems that textile workers organized around in the early 20th century. I mean, these are like identical to what these same workers are organizing, you know, around in Bangladesh. I mean, these are like, you know, and they have the equivalent of a, you know, triangle shirtwaist fire very routinely. I mean, so these people are really, this is a life and death struggle for those folks. And again, I think the logic of a sort of sacrifice of condemning people, especially when we talk about, when we bring it onto the international level and start talking about imperialism, then I think, yeah, I mean, we have a very clearly structured global distribution of low-wage workers make stuff over here. It gets sold to high-wage consumers over here. And the only people who are really profiting are the people at the top.
That was a conversation with Nick Partika, whose voice is part of a special series here on Free City Radio, Capitalism's Sacrifice of Humanity. This series is produced in collaboration with activist scholar Max Haven, who's Canada Research Chair in the Radical Imagination and co-director of the Reimagining Value Action Lab Rival at Lakehead University in Ontario. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. I host and produce the program, which airs weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CGLO 1690 a.m., also in Geauguagui, Montreal, on Wednesdays at 8:30 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 10:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, BC on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto at 5:30 a.m. on Fridays, and on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up through Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Just search Free City Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.
are tuned in to Kingston's only truly local radio station, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC. Every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM.